All right, well, we really did leave off at a good point at the end of Ben's lecture. So I hope that we can pick up where he left off and dive into some of the practicalities around hospitality. And this is a workshop. And for me, workshop connotes two things. My dad is a furniture maker, so I grew up in his workshop where things were made. And a workshop is a place where the process of making is undertaken. It involves creativity, and it involves planning. It involves deliberate action. Cut here, put a screw in here, take off the rough edges over here. And it involves follow through. If we're going to have a finished product, for our imaginative purposes, that finished product might be a table. And the completion of that metaphorical table will really be up to each of you as you go from here. And the second thing a workshop means to me is what writers do to further a piece of writing. They gather together, each with a work in progress, and they share what they have so that they can hear from others where things really shine, where things need to be cut back, where there needs to be growth in their piece. So whether you realized it or not, you showed up today with a work in progress, and you have something to share with the rest of us, something that undoubtedly needs to grow in areas and be cut back in others, allowed to shine and polished to gleaming. So there are my hopes for our time together, that we make something in this hour and that each of us have the courage to offer what we already have to this group and the humility to see where the table talk that we already do know how to do might be more richly developed. So I'm going to offer some ideas on this topic to you for about 30 minutes, and I'll be inviting input and reflection at points as I go. And then we're going to have about 30 minutes for small group work and discussion. So that's the plan. So what is table talk? You have a handout, and on the handout I've just included some quotes that I thought you may want to have that I will be sharing with you along the way, and some of the questions for reflection. So it's not an outline per se, but things do come in the order in which you'll see them. So I've called this workshop Table Talk, meaning no more and no less than the potentially endangered art of conversation. And to be perfectly clear, I cannot teach you how to have a good conversation in an hour, or a day, or a week, or in 10 steps, or with a toolkit of tried and true methods. Conversation is an art, and it is called an art because it doesn't come naturally to us. It requires the energy necessary, I love this, this is one of your quotes, to overcome the entropy of fatigue and passivity. Anybody know what entropy means? Any physicists out there? Right. Go ahead.
It's the ability to be moved and to resist movement.
Yeah. Others? Want to clarify that definition?
Entropy.
Decay. It's this tendency toward decay and chaos. So there's movement toward that in us that has to be overcome. In other words, I think becoming a good conversationalist is about becoming the kind of person who can have good conversations, which is about growing in virtues, or in Jesus' words, about loving one another just as he loved us, or in the Apostle Paul's terms, about bearing the fruit of the Spirit. So we will consider a few necessary skills and attitudes, virtues, for good conversation later on, but I wanted to frame our time with these realities in mind. I am not a conversation expert. There are people in this room I could point to who I would say have grown further along the path than I have. but I offer myself to you. And conversation is not a science, but an art. And growing as a conversationalist means growing as a person. So, table talk. Obviously, conversation does not happen only around a table. But when people gather around a table for a meal, conversation follows. The table itself, the physical thing, lays a common ground between people. And it gives each of us something to lean on. We might need that support. It creates appropriate space between people. And it physically orients our bodies toward one another. And if hospitality is hard to imagine without some form of sustenance offered, pumpkin bread, tea, even something as simple as that cup of tea, it is at least as equally difficult to imagine hospitality without some sort of sustaining words shared between people. So even a question as simple as, "How are you?" opens deep and wide possibilities. So in the grand scheme of our seminar here, this workshop is a what do you do when you have people in your home and around your table workshop. It's a what on earth will we talk about workshop, or more precisely, a how on earth will we talk workshop. And I do hope that it will be intensely practical for each of us. Conversation's not easy, and for many of us, the prospect of striking up and sustaining a conversation with a stranger is anxiety-producing. Or maybe it's the other way around. The prospect of being asked questions we do not wish to answer, and the prospect of being expected to reveal ourselves, our thoughts, or our feelings, before we are good and ready, is the very reason we hesitate to invite people into our homes and into our lives, or the reason that we don't accept invitations. So clearly, there are many complicated and personal dynamics in play when we consider what conversation is. And I'm sure we will not name, much less adequately address them all in this brief hour. I do hope, though, that as we consider this aspect of hospitality together, we might all keep in the back of our minds this question. What would it mean for me to be hospitable with myself? What would it mean for me to be hospitable with myself? And I suspect that our answers to this question will be as varied as we are. And yet, I'd like us all to consider this question in the context of this workshop on conversation. What would it mean for me to be hospitable with myself in conversation? To return to that writer's workshop analogy, for some of us, the answer to this may point us to areas where we need to grow and expand, areas where we need to offer more detail and color. And for others, it may be things that we need to cut back, places where less may in fact be more. So if this question touches on interior dynamics, there are certainly exterior dynamics to consider. We live in a veritable deluge of words, sound, communications of various sorts, and very few of these would actually pass as conversation. And in fact, more often than not, they compete with conversation or inhibit it from happening in the first place. And we'll talk more about conversation inhibitors a little bit later. In his book on Eating as Humans, The Hungry Soul, the name of the book, author Leon Cass notes, and you have this quote on your paper too, "In spirit and in manner, if not also in content, conversation can be distinguished from communication, recital, argument, boasting, advertisement, announcement, gossip, inquiry, small talk, shop talk, exchange of opinion, edification, and even discussion." He adds, "Conversation is not a species of trade or exchange. in which each trader is seeking to swap for or to receive what belongs to another. So what's left? What is conversation? And the more that I thought about how on earth we would get at answering that question, the more I realized it is perhaps best gotten at by asking, what does conversation do? Recital spouts a memorized script. Argument defends a position. Boasting exaggerates strengths and ignores weaknesses. Advertisement tries to convince you you need something. But what does conversation do? So, workshop, time to make something. I want you to turn to a neighbor, or you know, maybe three of you together, and take a few minutes and talk together, brainstorm, what does conversation do? Go. Answer at this point. What does conversation do? Just call it out. Yeah.
It drives connection and creates empathy and has an intention of understanding.
Intention, the goal, understanding. Okay, others?
So it's relationship.
It looks for value.
Mm-hmm. Reveals itself.
Scary.
Foster trust.
Gives opportunity for prayer. Mm-hmm.
Two more, maybe?
Recognizes worth.
Ask for more.
Great.
Okay. Build.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And?
Find a place for people to be together.
Okay.
Dignifies. And Danny said,
okay, I'll do that.
Creates a space for people to be together.
Space for togetherness.
Encourages listening.
This kind of covers a lot, but it does.
Getting to know you.
Yeah.
Which, as Susie pointed out, doesn't exclude sharing ideas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So ideas have a place as well. Great. Whew. All right. Let me add this description of what conversation does to the mix. It, too, is from the book I mentioned, The Hungry Soul. And this description is given as table talk, conversation over a meal. And as you will see, it provides the meal, the table provides the operative metaphor. Cass says, conversation enables us to taste, indeed to savor, the souls of our fellow diners. Not their intimate private depths or their polished public personae, but that wonderful side of the soul at play when it is unselfconscious and immediately being its open, companionable, responsive self. To savor one another. And note the boundaries and the abandoned facades as well. Not the intimate private depths, not the polished public persona, but that wonderful side of the soul at play. Unselfconscious, open, companionable, responsive. I think in light of all that you have thought of and this, we have something to shoot for. So now to offer you a bit more on what conversation is. It is entirely possible to be a great communicator and a terrible conversationalist. I think a little more work on the difference between the two could be helpful to us. So allow me to take us into the history of words, because I like words, and because I think it's instructive. The Latin root of communication is communis, which means to make known, to make common, as in shared, what we think or feel. Communication in this sense finds a place in conversation. It seems to me that to be open, companionable, and responsive, one must, to some degree, share and be transparent with his or her thoughts and feelings. I think of the idiom, putting it on the table. So communication then might be a starting point for conversation. If we refuse to put anything on the table, if we refuse to make anything common, how are we to even begin to have a conversation? But conversation goes farther than simply putting things on the table. Conversation comes from the old French, converser, which first meant to pass one's life with, or to live or dwell with someone. And converser came from the Latin conversari, which meant to turn oneself about, to move to and fro. Do you hear some of the differences between communication and conversation? I love the spaciousness of the old French meaning of converser and the sense of longevity or comprehensiveness. It's the long haul take on speaking with one another. And to me, this connotes many conversations, an ongoing conversation. And that takes the pressure off one singular interaction. It also depends upon, I think, some sort of relational stability. And the Latin root includes the sense, the expectation even, that conversation both gives space for movement and for exploration, and ultimately gives space for change. Cass notes that this comprehensive sense of conversing as living with gradually was transformed and narrowed to conversing as talking with. Yet even so, the connotations of leisure and passing time, of unhurriedness and spontaneity, of exploration, invention, of being well-turned and well-rounded, and above all, of openness and responsiveness, are all still attached to the idea of conversation. End quote there. Cass names that most prized and coveted commodity, time. Unhurriedness. This is a characteristic of conversation. And he names openness and responsiveness. So conversely, hurriedness, being closed, being unresponsive, these things inhibit conversation. So here I want to take some time to think together about more dynamics that inhibit conversation. And by inhibit, I mean both internal and external realities that prevent conversation from happening. If being mentally and emotionally closed is an example of an internal dynamic, then hurriedness, busyness, is an external one. And going back to the old French, passing one's life with, dwelling with, certainly transience, is a very real and formidable external dynamic that inhibits conversation. So what are others? This time, I want to give you a moment to think silently. This is plunging inside, as well as thinking outside of yourself. Think for a minute to yourself, what inhibits conversation? And then I'll invite you to share. So quietly. Hey, what inhibits conversation?
Talking too much.
Yeah, one-sidedness. Mm-hmm.
Fear.
Poor listening.
That's probably related to that too.
Self-absorption.
Woo, woo, woo. I heard perfectionism.
Being shy.
Okay.
Judgment.
Agenda. Technology.
Yeah. How about some more of the external? Noise, TV.
Kids.
I don't know how many times I've been like, I have not finished a conversation in 5 years. We love them, and we try to converse with them too. But cell phones and difficult relationships. That, yeah.
Comparative status.
Meaning comparing ourselves to each other, kind of?
Yeah, like you're going to go to your college reunion. And I think maybe men are more aware. What's the other guy going to be driving? What's his wife going to look like?
What's death going to throw down about ourselves?
Here we are,
Shane.
Emma,
there's probably a connection between
you. What about the lack of focus?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so easy to
read
my mind.
Yeah. Distrust. Especially distrust having caused by someone gossiping. Mm-hmm. So someone's formed an opinion of this person that you distrust.
Mm-hmm. Overcommitment, relational overcommitment.
Yeah.
Too many
too many people.
Yeah.
Multitasking. My supervisor used to type away with his keyboard while I was trying to talk to him. It drove me crazy.
Rigidity is lost.
General busyness. Music?
Yeah, it's hard to find a restaurant.
Complaining. How busy we are, or you know, what's going on. I know people, conversations just evolve into who can out-complain the other.
Lack of anything in common.
Not being aware of people's disabilities.
So this is probably underneath a lot of them, but self-centeredness. I mean, we're most about ourselves.
Lack of curiosity.
Well, I think we are well acquainted with quite a bit of conversation. Yeah, one more.
Language barrier sensitivity.
Great. Yeah. Everybody's heart entropy. Great. Just to add to sort of the biblical paradigm that Ben provided for us, when I think of archetypical inhibited conversations, I think of Adam and Eve after they've eaten the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, shoddily clothed in their fig leaves, ducking between trees in the garden, hiding from the Lord God. He still calls to them. Thank you for that hospitality, Lord God, who still seeks us out. I also think of Cain trying to blow off the Lord's question, where is your brother Abel? I don't know, am I my brother's keeper? Or Jesus at a Sabbath dinner, in the home of a ruler of the Pharisees, taking a sick man to his side and asking his host and fellow guests, inviting conversation, perhaps, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? And their response, stony silence. So there we have shame, anger, and a defensive hostility. No wonder, right? Conversation requires energy to overcome the entropy of fatigue and passivity facing us from within and from without at every turn. And the very first question I think we all ask, at least I ask, maybe unconsciously even, is it worth it? And to lead into our small group time, I want to consider together the first of four skills, virtues. Flip your paper. I think these are four things that are really great starting points. I found them in a book that's dedicated to caring for language as a whole. I'm sure there are more, but for our time, let's consider these four together. So the first, is it worth it? Is conversation worth it? Before anything, we're faced with a choice. The opportunity for conversation may come to us unbidden, unplanned. It may come as a total surprise and a complete inconvenience, but we still have a choice in the moment whether or not to enter into conversation. The root idea of deliberate is to act with free will, with care, with consciousness. And when we deliberate, we take responsibility for our choices. I had not thought of this before, and maybe you haven't either. Conversation always entails a choice for something. Community, connection, shared space, time, thought, vulnerability, and a choice against something. Passivity, solitude, self-focus. And this is helpful too. When we enter seriously and intentionally into conversation, we effectively commit to thinking with one another, being responsive, listening, and caring. Deliberation calls to me on a deep level. I can feel my insides kind of constricting as I share this with you because boundaries are not easy for me. I need to nurture the skill of deliberation, of choice making in conversation, because I am too liable not to make a real choice to be in conversations. I let them just happen to me. And eventually I feel overrun or worn out. I'm not really committed, responsive, or caring at all because I'm present in body, but my mind is on whatever I was in the middle of doing or planning to do before you interrupted me. And then in my dark little heart, I'm blaming you instead of taking responsibility for me. And the whole possibility of conversation is lost, inhibited, by my failure to make a choice in the moment. Instead, I fall into an unhelpful and even hurtful passive aggression. So that's me. Glad I'm leaving you. But what about you? On your handout, you have the quotations that I just shared under deliberation. And there are questions for reflection. So soon, you'll break into small groups for the next three skills. But for this one, as sort of a warm-up, take a silent moment again with these questions for yourself. And I'll invite you to share, but I realize we get into personal territory. Maybe not everyone wants to share about their dark little hearts. But for you to consider, what are the hardest things for you to choose for in conversation? And what are the hardest things to choose against? Why is that? It'll take a couple minutes. I know a couple minutes is not enough, but you need to take this home with you. What are the hardest things for you to choose for in conversation? Maybe it's easier to start with the again.
Patience.
Hard to choose for patience.
No, without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to choose for talking with someone who you know is very self-centered. And sometimes also with someone who's on a very different IQ type level, just because there isn't the reciprocality of engagement, that takes discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a certain type of choice that you made. Yeah, Charlie.
I think it's hard to choose against gossip and negativity in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's hard to choose for conflict.
Yeah.
It's hard to choose against managing and controlling from a
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to choose against managing and controlling.
Finding the solutions. Choosing. Being a fixer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hard to choose against fixing. Mm-hmm.
Listening deeply and allowing the conversation to go where it will rather than trying to think of my next move in order to direct it. Something that I can talk about it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
To realize that some people don't deserve my time and to end the conversation. Mm-hmm. Or that they're abusing my engagement with them. And I need to shut myself down with it. Mm-hmm. That's hard for me.
Yeah, you're with me in the boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for thinking deeply and sharing honestly. A couple notes on this small group time that I want to give. For each of these remaining three skills or attitudes, virtues, I want you to break into groups of three or four, keep it small so you all have time to think together and respond. And let someone, one person in the group, read the quotation that I've provided, and then give everyone a moment to let it sink in or reread it. I've also offered what I think might be the opposite or the dark side of these virtues, the opposing vice, perhaps. I'm sure they're debatable. This is just my thinking. But I think that it helps to pair these two things so that we can find ourselves on a spectrum and to think about patterns in our own lives. So you may want to ponder the pairing of the two words or even consider what a different take on the opposite might be. So then take some time in your small group to discuss what you think of the quote. What does it raise in you? And then discuss the reflection questions. Don't force anybody to share, but make sure everyone who wants to share has a chance to. And then just move along to the next word and the next word. And I'll give us about 10, 15 minutes for this. Right, I know. About 5 minutes, I guess, for each word. But I think we're going to be forced to save most of our discussion for the roundtable discussion in the afternoon. But after the small group time, we should have a few minutes to touch down together again as a group. So go ahead, turn to a few people around you and jump in.